We got Noah's Ark from the far off past. We're gonna reproduce an atomic blast. We got World War II with the original cast.
He's got a really, really, really big one tonight.
Don't you love to hear him say,
there's some mama warriors out there. Hello, fellas. Yes, sir, we've really got a spectacle for you this time.
We'll take a TV trip to the moon and stars. First a hop to Venus, then a jump to Mars.
Next week, Jupiter will be ours. On this year, we really get around, don't we?
It's a really big show.
Shoe, not show.
And we're all gonna go.
Goo, not go.
Well, shoe or show or goo or go. We really, really, really got a big one tonight.
I am the storm.
Hello, Lake of the Ozarks. Welcome to a really big shoe on Damn Radio. I'm JR. It's Tuesday. It's October 14. This is the day that Charlie Kirk would have turned 32. So when someone gets killed when they're 31.9, I say they got killed when they're 32, but I'm evidently in the minority on that. To me, Charlie Kirk was the same age as Jesus when he was killed. 32! Because I think there's symbolism there, too. Anywho, 573-746-8020. If you want to be on the shoe, if you want to talk to me, if you have a question or a comment, and you're not a clown, I'll take your call. 573-746-8020. You can shoot an email into this studio, the Lake Ozark Real Estate of the Art Studio, with this address. Listen close. Live at damradio.com. It's 202, and it's time for the shoe. And we're going to start off with Truth Social like we do. 16 hours ago, the president posted this video. It evidently is from Air Force One.
We gather on a day of profound joy, of soaring hope, of renewed faith, and above all, a day to give our deepest thanks to the Almighty God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It should now be clear to everyone throughout the region that decades of fomenting terrorism and extremism, jihadism and anti-Semitism have not worked. They've been a disaster. They've just killed. They've killed. From Gaza to Iran, those bitter hatreds have delivered nothing but misery, suffering, failure, and death. Through glory and heartache, we have built industries together. We have made discoveries together. We have confronted evil together, and we have waged war together. And perhaps, most beautifully of all, we have made peace together. And this week, against all odds, we have done the impossible and brought our hostages home. The God who once dwelled among his people in this city still calls us, in the words of Scripture, the turn from evil and do good. Together we've shown that peace is not just a hope that we can dream about, it's a reality. It's an incredible triumph for Israel and the world to have all of these nations working together as partners in peace. This is the day that people across the region and around the world have been working, striving, hoping, and praying for. With the historic agreement we've just signed, those prayers of millions have finally been answered.
That is President Trump, obviously, on Truth Social. And that was, what did I say, 17 hours ago? No, 16 hours ago. 14 hours ago, he posted the cover to Georgia Maloney's new book. There's a foreword by Donald Trump Jr. It's called I Am Georgia, My Roots, My Principles. I am so fascinated by Georgia Maloney. I'm going to talk about that after I read what the president said here. Giorgia Meloni, the great prime minister of Italy, has written a new book, I'm Giorgia, My Roots, My Principles. Giorgia is doing an incredible job for the wonderful people of Italy. And this book explores her journey of faith, family, and love of country, which gave her the wisdom and courage required to serve her nation and make her people proud. She is an inspiration to all. Get your copy today with a link. Maloney is a fantastic leader. Donald J. Trump. Yesterday, he was like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble at home, but you're beautiful. You mind if I call you that? Let's go to Wikipedia here and read about Georgia Maloney for a second. G-I-O-R-G-A Maloney. Yep, she's at the top. Let's see. Born 15 January 1977. Italian politician who served as prime minister of Italy since 22. First woman to hold the office. Member of the Chamber of Deputies since 06. She's been president of the National Conservative Party called Brothers of Italy, or the FDL, since 14. She was president of the European Conservatives and Reformers Party from 20 to 5. In 92, Maloney joined the Youth Front, the youth wing of the Italian Social Movement, MSI, a neo-fascist political party founded in 46 by followers of Italian fascism. See, that's amazing to me. She has transitioned. So, where's the calculator? Here it is, 1992. 1992 minus, I guess I didn't need the 19977. So she joins a socialist party at the age of 15. Let's see. She later became the national leader of Student Action, the student movement of the National Alliance, a post-fascist party that became the MSI's legal successor in 95 and moved towards national conservatism. She was a counselor for the province of Rome in 98 to 02, after which she became the president of Youth Action, the youth wing of AN. In 08, she was appointed Minister for Youth Policies in the fourth Berlusconi government, a role which she held until 11. In 12, she co-founded FDL, a legal successor to AN, and became its president in 14. She unsuccessfully ran in the 14 European Parliament and the 16 Roman municipal election. After the 18 general election, she led FDL in opposition during an entire 18th legislature. FDL grew its popularity in opinion polls, particularly during the management of the COVID-19 pandemic by the Draghi cabinet, a national unity government to which FDL was the only opposition party. Following the fall of the Draghi government, FDL won the 2022 general election. Maloney's a Catholic and a conservative and believes in defending God, fatherland, and family. She's opposed to euthanasia, same-sex marriage, and same-sex parenting, stating that nuclear families are exclusively headed by male-female pairs. She's also a critic of globalism. Maloney supported but never enacted a naval blockade to halt illegal immigration, and she's been described as xenophobic and Islamophobic by some critics. A supporter of NATO, she maintains Euroceptic views regarding the EU, views she describes as Euro-realist. She favored improved relations with Russia before the 22 invasion of Ukraine, which she condemned, pledging to keep sending arms to Ukraine. In 24, Forbes ranked Maloney as the third most powerful woman in the world, and she was listed among the most influential people in the world by Time magazine, while Politico ranked her as the most powerful person in Europe in 25. So, yeah, she's from Rome. She's currently my favorite Roman. She started off in politics at the age of 15, joining socialists and fascists. Fascinating to me. That was a quick evolution. All righty. Well, I just wanted to go down that rabbit hole in case you didn't know anything about her. Well, now you do. She has a child. She broke up with her partner a couple of years ago, Andrea Gianbruno. Gianbruno, who I think he has his own Wikipedia page. I can't be sure. But let's see here. Where's my calculator? 2025 minus 1977, 48 years old. Very impressive. Very impressive. All right, back to Truth Social. Enough on that. Let's see. 14 hours ago, a quote from Jensen Huang. President Trump did the miracle. We're so proud and grateful. It's an email. Evidently, Jensen Huang is like the CEO of NVIDIA. And this is what he sent out to all of his employees. I'm so proudly moved and deeply grateful to share that just moments ago, our colleague, Avinadan Orr, was released to the Red Cross in Gaza after two unimaginable years in Hamas captivity. Avinadan has come home. Throughout this time, our hearts have been with Avinadan and his loved ones, especially his mother, Ditza Orr, whose strength, courage, and unwavering hope have inspired us all. Night after night, our employees in Israel stood with her in vigil, united in determination that Avinadan would return home safely. That unity reflected the very best of who we are. Over these past 2 years, thousands of NVIDIA employees have served with extraordinary bravery in the defense of their communities during this war. Many have faced immense pain, loss, and uncertainty. Some have lost family members or loved ones. We lost our colleague, Amit Shayat Ayali, suffered the heartbreaking loss of his daughter, Danielle, and her partner, Noam. We remember them with love, and we hold Ayali and his family close in our thoughts and prayers. The losses to our Jewish, Druze, and Arab families alike have been immense. Grief knows no borders, no faiths, no divisions. We mourn together, and we hope together for peace, understanding, and a future without fear. Through it all, our teams have remained steadfast, supporting and caring for one another. I am profoundly grateful to your strength, compassion, and dedication. Now, as the first phase of President Trump's peace agreement and the ceasefire take effect and all hostages return to their families, we witness the close of a painful chapter at the beginning of long-awaited healing for the region. Avinadan, welcome home. Your safe return brings profound relief and joy to the entire NVIDIA family. We are here for you and your family as you begin this next chapter of healing. May this moment mark the first step toward recovery, renewal, and lasting peace for all who have been touched by this war. With gratitude and hope, Jensen, the CEO of NVIDIA, sending out an email to everybody in his corporation. Donald Trump posted a screen grab of it on True Social 14 hours ago. Yeah, if a lot of our stupid, moronic friends and family and relatives and neighbors had gotten their way and Kamala had been elected, well, then these people would never have been reunited with their families. You might mention that to them. 13 hours ago, Trump typed this: heading back home to a very safe and beautiful D.C. Accomplished so much today in Israel and Egypt. A lot of work, but I wouldn't have it any other way. It was an experience like no other. Now all of those great nations that have fought so long and hard for the region have to come together and get the job done. Gaza is only a part of it. The big part is peace in the Middle East. Then 13 hours ago, he posted this: Time magazine wrote a relatively good story about me, but the photograph may be the worst of all time. They disappeared my hair and then had something floating on top of my head that looked like a floating crown, but an extremely small one, really weird. I never liked taking pictures from underneath angles, but this is a super bad photo and deserves to be called out. Why are they doing? What are they doing and why? Well, they're trying to make you look bad. They're reluctant to say nice things about you, so they're going to put a little sugar in the medicine. I guess I'm going to go to Gurgle and look for this Time magazine. Time magazine, Trump. Let's see what it looks like here. Cover. let's see. It's all right. Just relax. If you don't like a photo from below, it is what it is. You don't always get your angle like you want. And I don't really see the crown he's seeing. His hair is like spun gold. So if it's in the sun, I'm sorry, sir, it's just going to have to disappear. All right, now we get into today. 2 hours ago, just got back from the Middle East. What a point in time that was. The crowd for Charlie Kirk's Presidential Medal of Freedom presentation is so big and enthusiastic that I moved it out to the new Rose Garden, where everyone can see the Presidential Wall of Fame and the Palm Court renovation. Enter through the main south entrance. And correct me if I'm wrong, that's in about 45 minutes, right? Which means probably 90. I'll keep checking the televisions. 2 hours ago, all 20 hostages are back and feeling as good as can be expected. A big burden has been lifted, but the job's not done. The dead have not been returned as promised. Uh-oh. Phase two begins right now. DJT. 1 hour ago, a photograph of President Trump on Air Force One at his desk holding a book from Eric Trump called Under Siege. Don't forget to get a copy of my son's book, Under Siege, which is breaking records everywhere. It's a phenomenal book. It's a must read for everyone. Congratulations, Eric. You deserve it. What is the sub headline? My family's fight to save our nation. Well, that's about as concise as you can be there, buddy. All right, what have we got here? A 33-second video. Have we hit another Venezuelan boat? It appears that way. Okay, there's the boat. It's our 33-second video. And the screen's white. It's gone. All right, let's see what he says here. Under my standing authorities as commander-in-chief this morning, the Secretary of War ordered a lethal kinetic strike on a vessel affiliated with a designated terrorist organization, a DTO, conducting narco trafficking in the U.S. Southcom area of responsibility just off the coast of Venezuela. Intelligence confirmed the vessel was trafficking narcotics, was associated with illicit narco-terrorist networks, and was transiting along a known DTO route. Strike was conducted in international waters, and six male narco-terrorists aboard the vessel were killed in the strike. No U.S. forces were harmed. Thank you for your attention to this matter. 2 hours ago. All right, we're all caught up. Very good. It's 2:17. And that does it for our Truth Social deal here. Let's see. Peter St. Ange, PhD, the China trade war just blew up. China threatened a worldwide embargo of rare earth minerals. Trump responded with 130% tariffs starting 11-1. Both sides wanted a deal. China just blinked and showed it needs one, as in it actually needs a deal. Yes, everybody needs a deal. 2 years of a recession.
The China trade war just blew up. Stock markets got clubbed like a baby seal. Bitcoin dumped 10%. Gold soared to $4,035, up 51% for the year. So the U.S.-China trade war had been settling down, looking like a deal was coming by the November 11th deadline. Both sides were making happy noises. President Xi and President Trump were scheduled to meet in a few weeks, and tariffs on China continued at a pedestrian 30%. Now, 30 is close to what everybody else pays, so Japan, Korea, and the EU are all paying 15% now. Mexico's at 25 for non-USMCA goods, and Canada's at 35, which is actually higher than China. Now, last week, it all blew up when China imposed a worldwide export ban on so-called rare earth minerals, what the Wall Street Journal called a, quote, bombshell. So rare earths are essential for everything from smartphones and computer chips to electric vehicles to military aircraft and drones. A single F-35 uses nearly half a ton of rare earths. Note, rare earths are not actually rare. The term comes from the fact you have to dig a lot of dirt to get a little bit of element. So we've got plenty in Wyoming, Alaska, even Missouri.
What?
But environmentalists have made it basically impossible to mine them, so we are completely dependent on China for our military production. Trump's response was fierce in a Truth Social post. He called China's move, quote, extremely hostile, promising that as of November, he will impose an additional 100% tariff on China, bringing it to 130%, and that he would unleash new and interesting punishments. Now, Trump does have a lot of punishments to choose from, including export controls of critical American chips or software to China, antitrust or anti-dumping sanctions, origin rules to crack down on Chinese re-exports, IP lawsuits for Chinese tech theft, canceling visas for Chinese government officials or even Chinese students, of which there are almost 300,000 in the U.S., or the nuclear option, restrict Chinese access to American financial markets, which account for $850 billion worth of Chinese companies raising cheap money in America. Note, there are precisely zero listed American companies in China. There's even the little detail of a roughly $2 trillion gold-denominated debt China owes us dating from World War II, larger than all Chinese holdings of American debt.
Hmm.
American presidents have pretended that debt does not exist, but Trump could change all that. So as SAG's brought to you by iTrust Capital.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that fascinating? There's a lot of insight in that. Thank you, Dr. Peter Saint-Ange, PhD, Professor Saint-Ange. Wall Street Mav responds, China is getting desperate in the trade war, deploying its nuclear rare earth ban. The trade war already cost China trillions in stimulus. Now that third countries are turning against Chinese dumping, they need a deal, and Trump's going to extract maximum pain for it. Let's see. Sagetta Eterna, for decades, the globalist consensus in Washington treated China as a partner, sacrificing our industrial base on the altar of cheap goods. They watched as Beijing hollowed out the Rust Belt and assumed this was the inevitable price of progress. Trump's the first leader to treat China for what it is, a strategic adversary. This rare earth threat isn't a show of strength. It's the last gasp of a regime that never expected an American president to actually fight back. Here's the hard-hitting fact that proves the necessity of this fight. A 2017 U.S. government commission estimated that the annual cost of Chinese intellectual property theft to the American economy is as high as $600 billion. The D.C. establishment was content to let our nation be blood dry. Trump is finally turning off the spigot. Well, there's a lot of insight for you on that topic. We knew that it was big and huge, and the stock market was worried about it. And then I would say, basically, in a nutshell, China capitulated, and the stock market bounced right back up. A lot of moving parts. I keep saying it, man. There's a lot of moving parts. All right, let's see. ZeroHedge.com headline, rare earth stocks go vertical after report. Pentagon to go on a $1 billion critical mineral buying spree.
Mm-hmm.
According to the filings from the Defense Logistics Agency, the DLA, the United States Department of Defense. Why they keep saying defense? Did they not get the memo? Hey, Zero Hedge, it's now the Department of War, has moved to, I guess, old habits, you know, moved to secure a $1 billion, up to $1 billion in critical minerals from cobalt and antimony to scandium and tantalum as part of a global race to reduce dependence on China. One former defense official summed it up. Is it a former war official? Quote, they're definitely looking for more, and they're doing it in a deliberate and expansive way. The Pentagon's urgency is clear. China's ability to turn off the supply of these critical minerals would have a direct, palpable, and adverse effect on the United States' ability to field the kind of high-tech capabilities that we're going to need for any kind of strategic competition or conflict. The OBBB adds fuel, $7.5 billion earmarked for critical minerals, including $2 billion to fortify the national stockpile and another $5 billion to expand U.S. supply chains. As one former official put it, offices handling mineral security are now flush with cash. Hmm. President Trump announces Columbus Day is back. Columbus Day, we're back. We're back, Italians. We're calling it Columbus Day. The entire room applauds. Do you know who's in the room? It's just the press. The press is applauding. Must be some Italians in there.
In other words, we're calling it Columbus Day.
Okay. Yes.
That was the press that broke out in applause. That was, can you believe that? I've never seen that happen before. The press actually broke out in applause. Good. Columbus Day. We're back. Columbus Day, we're back, Italians. Okay. We love the Italians.
Okay. Well, he's from New York. He might know some Italians. Mm-hmm. Casa Nostra, is that what it's called? All right, let's go to Wikipedia for a minute here. Surely they wouldn't lie about the New York Military Academy. Nope, there's a page. New York Military Academy, Control F, T-R-U-M-P. What have we got here? New York military students in uniform, 1964, including Donald Trump, second from the left. Donald Trump, age 17, the 1964 yearbook. Notable alumni. Donald Trump, class of 64. 45th and 47th president of the United States. Mm-hmm. And the rest is all in the footnotes. Now, why are we talking about the New York Military Academy? Look at this. Columbus Day, 1963, October 12. There's the 17-year-old Donald Trump leading a parade. They're in a parade, and he's leading the troops. Look at that. Uh-huh. Drill team participated in Columbus Day parade led by commanding officer Donald Trump. 17-year-old Trump. So, yeah, he's been in the Columbus Day Parade at least once. The parade. 1 month and 10 days later, Kennedy was shot. All right. Oh, Republicans against Trump. Man, there's a bunch of more. And it's not, there's not Republicans against Trump. This is just to name a bunch of Democrats. Put together, hey, let's call ourselves Republicans against Trump so that maybe Republicans will see the other side of their madness. Yeah, like rhinos, you know, Republicans against Trump, anti-Trumpers, except rhinos are Democrats, but they're not honest Democrats. Honest Democrat is called a Democrat. A dishonest Democrat's called a Republican with three U's, Republican. Anyway, they've got an X page, Republicans against Trump. And they have a video here. In Hoffman Estates, Illinois, ICE dragged a girl out of a car, slammed her to the ground, then pinned her face down and knelt on her neck. I'm 15, she cries out. I'm not resisting.
I can't hear people.
What has America become? Asks Republicans against Trump, the phonies. Well, the problem is our good friend Tricia McLaughlin, the Assistant Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, says, imagine being so desperate to demonize law enforcement, you post a video from a burglary arrest in Chicago that the police made over a year ago. It's not even ICE. It's the Chicago Police Department. This is a time of much propaganda. It's everywhere. Believe nothing. Except for me, of course. Here's the GatewayPundit.com headline. We are in this together. A day after his photograph with victim Virginia Jeffrey surfaced, Prince Andrew wrote an email to Jeffrey Epstein saying they would play some more soon. This is the Gateway Pundit. Barely a week goes by without new Epstein-linked revelation hurting even more of Andrew's battered reputation. February 27, 2011, British paper The Mail on Sunday published the infamous photograph of Andrew with Epstein and Geoffrey and Ghislaine in her London home. A day later, Andrew secretly sent an email to Epstein. We're in this together. We'll play some more soon. According to a previously unreleased bombshell email, the leaked email provides a definitive proof that the Duke lied in his interview with BBC's Newsnight when he claimed he never had any contact with Epstein after the pair were famously pictured walking together in Central Park in 2010. Andrew and Epstein together in New York in 2010, the royal has insisted that this trip marked the end of his relationship to the disgraced financier, but this has now been proven to be a lie. Hat tip to the Gateway pundit Paul Sarin on the World Wide Web, and it's already 2:30. Can you believe that? It's already 2:30. We're going to do some Todd Rundgren.
We can't play this game anymore, but can we still be friends? Things just can't go. Time for the wheel to turn.
So, you know, the timing just amazes me on these things. Todd Rundgren, Can We Still Be Friends, literally comes up totally random after I'm talking about Prince Andrew and Jeffrey Epstein. So funny. I love that. I should probably read the lyrics. It probably even gets or even more funny at that point. Operation Lightning Bug. Dozens of missing children located in Texas. Traffickers are rounded up. Redstate.com. We often hear about the huge number of kids that the Biden administration lost track of as they opened our southern border to any comers. Democrats would like you to believe that it's not a real problem, but the United States Marshal Service tracked down over 30 children listed as missing and helped 120 more return voluntarily to their homes. Operation Lightning Bug results. 3 arrests for harboring a runaway. 9 felony arrests. Hang on a second. Let me scroll down a little bit. That's all there is. 9 felony arrests, warrants executed. 6 trafficking survivors recovered and provided victim services. 5 human trafficking investigations opened. Over 30 missing juveniles located by officers and over 120 additional missing juveniles encouraged to return home, resulting in cleared entries from state and national databases. Let's see. Operation Lightning Bug. If you target vulnerable children, you will be found and arrested. Yeah, that's from redstate.com. That's a good thing. Zerohedge.com. Macron unveils new French cabinet, rejects resignation calls amid political crisis. He's not going to leave just yet. Breitbart.com. Trump warns Putin, settle the war in Ukraine or Tomahawk missiles may be going in their direction. Well, if I'm Putin, I'm like, cool, send them in their direction. Good. That's the way I would send them. Bad headline. The president said he acknowledged that the long-range precision strike weapon, which easily has the range from Moscow and most of Russia's Western military bases from which it launched airstrikes on Ukraine, represented a serious step change in Ukrainian capability, calling it a new step of aggression. He was considering, he said, therefore giving Putin a courtesy call to inform him about Tomahawk missiles, giving Russia a chance to de-escalate the conflict before any sales of the potent weapon were agreed. Reflecting on his slew of peace deals in recent months, Trump said the most enduring lesson he'd learned on ending conflicts was never give up, and lamented the pace of death in Ukraine inflicted on the troops on both sides of the conflict. Just think, every week they're losing 5,000 to 7,000 soldiers. It's ridiculous. Saying he was happy to sell weapons to European NATO allies who are then free to donate them to Ukraine. Trump said they need more weapons and we're looking into doing that. We hope we can provide them. You know our nation needs weapons too. We can't give so many weapons that we don't have any weapons. You never know what's going to happen. Who knows what's going to happen? Nobody knows what's going to happen, sir. Nobody knows when you're around, man. That's the whole beauty of it. Let's see. Anthony Blinken on X did a string here. I'll grab something out of the middle here. It starts with a clear and comprehensive post-conflict plan for Gaza. It's good that Trump adopted and built on the plan the Biden administration developed for months of discussion with Arab partners, Israel, and Palestinian Authority. Really? From the beach? Is that where he did it, Tony? It centers on temporary transitional authorities for Gaza's governance, security, humanitarian assistance, and rebuilding, led by Arab and international partners alongside Palestinians, backed by the United States, and ultimately handed over to full Palestinian control, says Tony Blinken, the 71st Secretary of State. I guess this gets brought up on Air Force One yesterday by Peter Ducey.
Blinken says it's good that President Trump adopted and built on the plan that the Biden administration developed. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Everybody knows it's a joke. Look, they did such a bad job. This should have never happened. This wouldn't have even happened. That was weak leadership, terrible. And the same thing with Russia, Russia-Ukraine. if a just a decent president, not a great president like me, not a great president. If a decent president was in, you wouldn't have had the Russia-Ukraine. And this is, I would say, even more so. This was bad policy by Biden and by Obama. Remember when Bibi came and he begged that you not do what they were doing with Iran? You remember that, right? Begged them. And they wouldn't even listen to him. Everything they did was the opposite of what you should have done. And it's nice that they try and take a little credit. That was years ago, and the mistakes were made years ago, and it was both by Biden and Obama.
Yeah, Tony Blinken trying to say, hey, this is just a foundation that we set, and Trump is swooping in for the kill. Really, the Biden administration was behind what happened this last week, huh, Tony? Okay. Yeah, whatever you think, buddy. All the women and girls taken hostage during the 10/7 attacks by Hamas have been released alive from Gaza as part of various deals, rescues, and individual releases up to February. The final 20 living hostages released yesterday were all men. I was unaware of this. It was only men. As of yesterday, Inbar Heyman, age 27, abducted from Nova Music Festival on 10/7, is the only female hostage confirmed to have died in Hamas captivity, whose body remains in Gaza. She's among the 28 deceased hostages whose remains have not yet been fully returned under the ongoing ceasefire agreement, with only 4 bodies handed over so far. All other female hostages have either been released alive or had their bodies repatriated in prior exchanges. Daily Caller: Trump calls for Netanyahu pardon in the Knesset speech after hostages freed in the ceasefire deal. Trump called on Israel's president to pardon Prime Minister Benji Netanyahu on corruption charges during a Monday speech to the Knesset hailing the recent Gaza ceasefire. Trump's address came on the heels. We know when it came. You don't have to tell us when. By this point, we know. During the speech, Trump urged Israeli President Isaac Herzog to pardon the prime minister on 2019 charges related to bribery and fraud, calling Netanyahu one of the greatest wartime presidents and a good man, alongside Herzog. So, clandestines posting this photograph, or not photograph, this drawing of Donald Trump sitting at the Resolute desk in the wind and rain in the storm, stuff blowing off his desk. His hair is completely horizontal. It says, Trump bringing peace to the Middle East is important, not just for the reasons of stopping violence, but because the deep state are now extremely vulnerable. Now, when Trump invokes the Insurrection Act, the left's cries of Hitler and dictator will fall on deaf ears. The demonic rats and mainstream media, but you repeat yourself, are permanently discredited. They just spent the last 10 years trying to destroy the man who just did the impossible and brought peace to the Middle East. So not only is their entire narrative completely up in flames, now the public will agree with Trump that the demonic rats and the mainstream media are a detriment to this nation and the entire planet. They literally tried to kill the guy who's bringing world peace. That makes them an enemy of all humanity. That's a great point. The stars are aligning here. Trump has the optics and the political ammunition to drop the hammer, and his position will only improve once he stops the war in Ukraine. As I've said from the beginning, strategically speaking, it makes the most sense to wait for high-profile arrests until after the peace deals are finalized. When Trump is at his highest approval, we're getting close. No, I don't think you need any high-profile arrests until after we have a MAGA Capitol Hill and a clean judiciary. We've got an extremely corrupt judiciary. What percentage of the judiciary is demonic rat deep state enemies within? 99%? No, we've got to get control of Capitol Hill. First, we have to destroy the demonic rat party to get that. And that's what's happening right now. That's what's in process. In my estimation, at 2:43 on October 14, the year of our Lord 2025, Here's a sounder from Trump from yesterday. I believe this is in Israel. Trump says Iran should finally recognize Israel's right to existence. The state of Israel is strong and will live and thrive forever.
If they want to make a deal, and we're going to see if we can do something, because this is crazy what's happening and we're not going to have this anymore. Neither the United States nor Israel bear the people of Iran any hostility. We merely want to live in peace. We don't want any looming threats over our heads. And we don't want to even think in terms of nuclear destruction. It's not going to happen. Never will happen. There's nothing that would do more good for this part of the world than for Iran's leaders to renounce terror, stop threatening their neighbors, quit funding their militant proxies, and finally recognize Israel's right to existence. They have to do that. They have to do that. And to Iran, and as you know, this is not said out of weakness. There's no weakness. But I'm going to say this, that we are ready when you are, and it will be the best decision that Iran has ever made. And it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And they're good people. I know a lot of Iranians in the United States. They're good people, smart, hardworking people. They don't want to see what's happened to their country. The story of fierce Israeli resolve and triumph since October 7th should be proof to the entire world that those who seek to destroy this nation are doomed to bitter failure. The state of Israel is strong, and it will live and thrive forever. And that is why Israel will always remain a vital ally of the United States of America. Israelis share our values, field one of the world's most powerful militaries. You really do. You have an amazing, what a job. What a job you've done.
Okay. Open source intel. Trump to Iran. Stop threatening neighbors, quit funding militants, and recognize Israel's right to exist. We are ready when you are. It will be the best decision Iran ever made. And it will happen. Loving the optimism.
There's nothing that would do more good for this part of the world than for Iran's leaders to renounce terror, stop threatening their neighbors, quit funding their militant proxies, and finally recognize Israel's right to existence. They have to do that. They have to do that. And to Iran, and as you know, this is not said out of weakness.
Okay, we just heard that sounder. I'm sorry. What's the best sign the CIA's international intelligence conglomerate strings controlling Iran have been cut? You're watching it live on television, says Brian Cates. If you needed a signal that the international intelligence conglomerate strings have been cut from the CIA... you have it right there in that sounder. Interesting point of view, sir. In an epic moment, President Trump's motorcade is en route to Air Force One in Israel so he can make it
the French president
to Egypt and solidify peace in the Middle East. Historic day for 47 and the world. Trump heads to Egypt for wilder peace talks. Does anybody look dumber than the Nobel Peace Prize Committee right now? Asks Wall Street Mav. Well, I don't know, because I'm not sure about that. The cutoff is the end of January. This just happened. Now, it gets down to whether or not they want to make exceptions. They have made exceptions, but they've been during COVID and World War II. And even then, they just kind of extended the deadline or didn't offer the prize whatsoever. But their decision was made whenever, and they could have changed it with something like this. But I'm not really too upset about it, to be honest with you. There's always 2026. Let's see if this sticks. I don't know. And then there's, on the other hand, there's, well, if it's true that he has stopped 8 conflicts. I don't know. I'm not really too upset about the Nobel Peace Prize Committee. It's It's already a corrupt group. We know this from the beginning. So I guess I really don't care that much. What really, they give it to Bathhouse for getting elected. So, I mean, what value is the prize in the first place? I don't know. What do you think? 746-8020. I'm not sure that I really care too much about it. Donald Trump, this is toward the end of the day. I think this is in Egypt where Georgia Maloney is standing behind him, as is Keir Starmer and others.
We're going to make sure that the Middle East is going to be a safe and secure place. It's a very important place in the world. It means so much. There were so many people who said the Middle East, and this has been going for many, many decades. I've read it many times that World War III will begin in the Middle East. It's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. There was a time that you would have thought it could have, but it's not going to happen. There won't be World War III, hopefully at all, but it's not going to start in the Middle East. We're not going to have a World War III if we're smart. It'll never be a World War III. Our work begins right here.
That is an interesting dichotomy there between pretty much our entire lifetime, all we've known is war in the Middle East. And then they said, this is what the future looks like. And everybody's just flying around in cars and there's no hostilities of any kind. And that's sort of the world that I think Elon Musk's envisioning. And this is a step toward that big time. If we can literally use the power of the United States economy and war machine to ensure a peaceful planet, as long as we can keep the United States from becoming corrupted again, in our lifetimes at least, we should be able to continue building on this civilization towards a world that looks like you envision it when you see these movies of the future. It's freaking such a fascinating time. I mean, this is, he's optimistic. And I tend to follow his lead on these things. He's very optimistic. He says not going to happen. Can't argue with him is my point. Do you know Judge Bozoberg protected Ray Epps? He gave Ray probation while locking everybody else up, says C3 on X. That's why it's important for Americans to once and for all know if Epps was a Fed asset on J6, hint 99.9% he was, it would unravel the entire operation, and we're getting close. C3 is always talking about this anymore. C3 is also talking about, remember the DeCarlos Brown who killed Irina Zarutska after he'd been arrested 14 times? Those are piker numbers. Listen to other numbers from enemies within killing people and being turned back on the streets by un-American judges. David Mazarigos was arrested and released 33 times. He went on to kill Nicola Tonzi. Alexander Dickey was arrested and released 39 times before killing Logan Frederico. Timothy Baylor, arrested and released 45 times before killing Lelawati Naren. C3 says, until judges are held accountable, this won't stop. And it's sickening. Yes, we've got to get rid of the judges. How do we get rid of the judges and the 16th Amendment while we're at it? That's what you do when you have a MAGA Capitol Hill. How do you get a MAGA Capitol Hill? You destroy the demonic rat party. How do you do that? Oh, just watch Donald Trump. Over the next 12 months, you'll see how it works. From thehill.com, Bathhouse inherently corrupting for a president to use military against their own people. Bathhouse criticized Trump for deploying the National Guard to cities around the nation, slamming what he called a politicization of the military. Quote, it wasn't controversial for me to go to other nations and say, you know what? It's a good idea for militaries to be under civilian control, because when you have military that can direct force against their own people, that is inherently corrupting. Bathhouse said about his time in office in an interview on Mark Maron's WTF podcast released, yesterday? I think the former demonic rat president said the Trump administration's attempting quote, what looks like a deliberate end run around the law that generally bars the military from being used for civilian policing, while knocking Trump's threat to invoke the Insurrection Act in Portland, Oregon, amid protests over immigration enforcement. Quote, that is a genuine effort to weaken how we've understood democracy, the constitutional professor said. We cannot continue to rely only on our military. Oh, this is from the Wayback Machine. I remember when he said this. This is like a decade ago. We cannot continue to rely, or more than that, 15 years ago. We cannot continue to rely on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded as our military, said Bathhouse. Well, of course, he's talking about Antifa. Now, how do you make Antifa just as strong as the U.S. military? Well, unlimited funding would be a good start. And also, start turning the U.S. military into a freak show. That's how you do it. In the broader context of the speech, Bathhouse was advocating for increased investment in civilian institutions like the State Department, foreign aid programs, and diplomatic corps to complement military efforts abroad, essentially building up non-military tools for national security, such as developmental assistance and international cooperation, rather than creating a paramilitary or domestic, enforcement force. This was part of his pitch for a more balanced approach to foreign policy, emphasizing that over-reliance on the military alone was unsustainable. No, I couldn't disagree more. Sorry. I'll read the line again. We cannot continue to rely on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded as our military. Well, I've already summed it up. He's talking about Antifa, his brown shorts, his deep state foot soldiers. Build them up while you tear down the military. Enemy within. We're going to be talking a lot more about Antifa as time goes on. This gal is on Timcast. Hold on, I don't know who this is. Timcast. Antifa's ultimate goal is to destroy the United States. The violence is essentially done out of nihilism. That's why there's such brutality in it. 2 minutes.
But what is it that Antifa is looking for? Like, why are they why is this enemy doing this? What is it that they want?
I can answer that.
Is it? Is it simply the violence?
Okay, so this is Andy No on Timcast IRL.
Violent overthrow of the government. I mean, what is it?
Yes, the ultimate goal is to destroy the United States. Antifa as a movement, it's anarchist communism. Like, people sometimes have just simply branded them as communists. That's not the full picture. There are communists in Antifa, but they're more so, the majority of them are anarchists and anarchist communists. And so the violence is done essentially out of nihilism. And that's why...
It's way worse than nihilism, sir.
There's such brutality in it. Setting buildings on fire when people are inside, or in the case of in June, the ICE facility, trying to lock and barricade the doors on the ICE facility and set it on fire when there are people inside. These type of brutal, cruel, subhuman type of acts of violence. And their motto is become ungovernable. Mm-hmm. So they want to destroy not just the U.S. as a nation, but they don't want necessarily replace it with like a communist regime. They want to destroy everything, all the institutions, the concept of nation states. So when they do things like
leftism destroys everything it touches, including civilization.
In giving out drug paraphernalia, there's a reason for that. In the homelessness, they believe it's an attack. Mass homelessness, they view as an attack on capitalism. It's destabilizing to communities. They like that. Mm. They know that the money from the drugs that are flowing in, that are killing people, helps foreign and international cartel networks that keeps migrants coming in. All that's meant to destabilize the U.S. They know they don't have the tanks or the type of weapons that can compete with the U.S. military. So their goals are attacking infrastructure and playing a very long game. And they've had a lot of success. I mean,
well, yeah, when you have Bathhouse and Brandon standing by and doing nothing, the demonic rats and the rhinos on Capitol Hill allowing cash to go to NGOs and then to DAFs and the shell accounts that get these people funded. Yeah, it's gone on for a long time. They have had success. I like Christopher Skovich's response here. Well, guess what? There's more of us with weapons than Antifa in this world who actually do give a damn about the nation they live in. So I don't ever see that happening. It's as simple as that. That's true. However, it'd be good if we could get rid of Antifa without us having to take up arms. Would you agree? Andy No says, the anarchist communists in Antifa are trying to overthrow the United States government and destroy the concept of borders and nations. Their motto has become ungovernable. To try to achieve that, they commit acts of depraved. He calls it nihilistic ultraviolence. I just call it leftism. Anti-civilization? Barbarism, maybe? Let's see here. Oh my goodness, it's already 3 o'clock. And it's time to rock. We're going to play some Dayglow now. Keeping my eye on the White House to see when this Charlie Kirk thing gets going. It literally is 3 o'clock on Charlie Kirk's birthday, the 14th of October. Back after this on Damn Radio. That is Dayglow on Damn Radio. We are back. It is 3:04. Welcome back to hour number two, segment three of the Tuesday edition of A Really Big Shoe on Damn Radio. I'm going to wait to see if I can... You never know. They say they schedule something for 4 o'clock Eastern, and we'll see what time they actually start getting into it. Probably, maybe, could possibly be before the end of my time here. but I want to carry it. It's significant to me. It's Charlie Kirk's birthday. And I'm a Charlie Kirk fan. We've been playing Charlie Kirk Sounders on this show since the very, very beginning. Let's resume the regular festivities here. Nothing new on Truth Social. Leftists are doling out scripted instructions to the insurrectionists on how to overwhelm ICE. Their entire goal is to overwhelm and ambush. This is a direct danger to our brave men and women of ICE. The National Guard needs to be running security nationwide as soon as possible, says Gunther Eagleman. I want to hear what this old boy on TikTok. I can't make out the name, though, on TikTok.
To all of my protesters out there, if you're going to be protesting, I need you to go and grab these two things. One, leaf blowers from Home Depot.
Why doesn't he? Will the ones from Menards not work?
Ryobi, battery operated, doesn't need a cord. Charge them up before you go protest. Make sure that you have anybody who is going to be on the front line have leaf blowers. Second thing, tennis.
That's good advice for pretty much any situation, though.
Rackets. Get tennis rackets on the front line. So when this is for with the tear gas,
an incoming canister, you swat it back at them. I like it.
If a tear gas can is sent to you, you take that tennis racket and you hit that bubby, you hit that thing as far as you can, straight back at who's ever shooting them at you. Get that tear gas out of there and then use the leaf blowers to clear the air. All right? Here's your strategy. That's it. Make sure that you have people with leaf blowers and tennis rackets to do just that. Godspeed.
Okay. Duly noted, sir. Why would you not have a leaf blower with you anyway? Portland, Oregon, October 12. That's Sunday. Far left extremists were infuriated to see patriotic counter-protesters arrive outside the ICE facility. Uh-oh, the Patriots with their flags. The MAGA crowd is here.
You're on the side of the oppressor! You see, you have to be early on that side, Mr. White!
I want to switch over to this for a second here.
How we have understood democracy.
I love how he says...
Okay, well, I thought it was more than that. That was the Mark Marone podcast. WTF. Yeah, they don't like it when the Patriots are there. They don't like that one bit. And they're lucky that we're so, what would be the word, patient and tolerant and really not wanting to escalate. Because let's face it, if there was a civil war, this thing would be over in a matter of minutes. We have all the guns and the experience on how to use them. They really have no idea how good they have it. If they got the conflict they envisioned, they would be over and done by the end of the day. I think Gateway Pundit headline, left-wing dark money mega donors, including Jorge, spent $20 million to oppose Trump's National Guard deployment in the District of Corruption alone. Financial disclosures reveal that progressive megadonors, including Jorge, have poured more than $20 million into organizations backing protests against Trump's crime crackdown in the District of Corruption. At the center of the network is Free DC, a project sponsored by Community Change and Community Change Action. We've talked about those before, more than once. The group staged demonstrations near the White House to oppose Trump's deployment of the National Guard and his goal of federalizing the district's police force. President's goal, straightforward, yes, we know, blah, blah, blah. Restore safety by cleaning up homeless encampments, increasing law enforcement presence, and making D.C. one of the safest cities in the world. Yet Free D.C. And its backers have mobilized to resist these efforts using protests and coordinated campaigns to weaken public confidence in the crackdown. Well, they're the enemy within, so. Free DC promotes radical tactics under the guise of resistance. Its principles urge followers to take up space, do not obey in advance, and engage in nightly disruptions by banging pots and pans in neighborhoods across the city. Groups also launched Cop Watch trainings to prepare activists for further confrontations with law enforcement. These methods mirror the organized protest playbook of the radical left, loud, disruptive, and designed to generate chaos rather than solutions. Yeah, they're leftists. They're enemies within. They're antithetical to our Constitution. The money trail exposes how deeply entrenched dark money networks are shaping DC politics. Between 20 and 23, Community Change and its affiliated entities received $12.5 million from Soros Open Society Foundations, $5.5 million from Arabella's network, and nearly $2 million from the Tides Foundation. I didn't realize they'd spent that much money in D.C. Where'd it go? Additional grants from Future Forward USA Action, a demonic rat-aligned super PAC, brought millions more into their coffers. These funds were officially labeled for civil rights or social welfare, but it flowed into groups manufacturing unrest in the streets. While Free DC only formally began in 23, its rise coincided with the congressional efforts to block a controversial rewrite of DC's criminal code that would have reduced penalties for violent crimes. The timing suggests that dark money donors viewed the group as a vehicle to push back against any attempt to hold criminals accountable. Gregory Lyakov says the cult, all caps C-U-L-T, is funded by foreign billionaire Christopher Hahn, who has spent, might be Hone, H-O-H-N, Hone, has spent more than $500 million on extremist Antifa radical groups for his own personal gain. What? Never heard the name before. Christopher Hone, $500 million on Antifa. Wow. He's funneled money into organizations with ties to the CCP. Groups openly working to undermine America from within. Well, yeah, you can't beat us militarily. You have to eat us out from the inside. We know how this works. That's what leftism does and is, and what the Demonic Rat Party embraces. Enemies within. It's a blanket statement. It covers a lot of ground. Enemies within. Reopen that closed tab. I didn't mean to close that. Oh, yeah, I did. I done used it. Secretary Sean Duffy goes on Fox Business Live and discussing the No Kings protest this weekend. See, if they would just go to Oktoberfest, they would be much better people.
The No Kings protest, Maria, really frustrating. I mean, this is part of Antifa paid protesters. It begs the question, who's funding it? But yeah, Democrats want to wait for a big rally of a No Kings protest, when the bottom line is, who's running the show in the Senate? Chuck Schumer's not running the show. The No Kings protesters or organizers are running the show. Is AOC threatening a primary against Chuck Schumer? Is she running the show? But you need a strong leader in the Senate to take control and make decisions. And Chuck Schumer's blown in the breeze. He has no power, no authority, because he's given it up to his primary opponent, potentially an AOC, yeah, or to the No Kings protester organizers. And it's shameful. The No Kings.
I think Data Republican picked up on that No Kings protest organizer. She says, I just created this spreadsheet and you should see some familiar names. I'm creating a thread on the founders of Indivisible shortly. Well, a lot of Fidelity Investment Charitable Gift Fund. How much did they give? Ooh, a lot. Oh my gosh, $4.7 million. I don't see how that's considered because it's charity. Oh, I see. That's not all they gave. They went on to give another $1.5 million, another $1.4 million, and another $1.3 million, and another $1.3 million. Wow. Fidelity Investments Charitable Gift Fund. Wow. That was in 20 through 22, and 23. Open Society Action Fund, Inc., $3 million to Indivisible. All these people are giving to Indivisible. Indivisible Project, Open Society Policy Center. Fund for a Better Future. Everything's always the exact opposite of what it says. Everything. That's because demonocrats are of Satan, which means they lie indiscriminately. The Sandler Foundation, $1 million. I hope that's not Adam Sandler. I doubt it is. The Kohlberg Foundation. The JPB Foundation. All giving to Indivisible Civics. Follow the money. Remember what Limbaugh said. Follow the money. Data Republican Small R says, meet the organizers behind the No Kings protest. Indivisible's Leah Greenberg and Ezra Levin. This week, the movement that started with a Google Doc, Indivisible, is back in the streets. Founded by former congressional staffers Leah Greenberg and Ezra Levin and funded by Jorge's Open Society Network, Indivisible has grown from a viral guide into one of the most powerful grassroots networks in the nation. Now they're leading No Kings, a nationwide push to remind America that democracy means no one is above the law. This thread dives into who Greenberg and Levin are, and how Indivisible rose to prominence, and what's really behind the No Kings movement. When you go to the No Kings website, you'll find over 100 partners listed, many of them familiar, many Soros backed. They include big names closely tied to the DNC, such as Mark Elias, Democracy Forward. Well, I'm going to scroll this myself. See if there's anything on here. It seems like it would not be political. It's a long list. I'm sorry to report that it's way longer than I would like to see. And fortunately for me, I'm not recognizing any of these logos. I'm glad to... There's Move On. I haven't heard of Move On in quite a while. Which means I'm halfway through the alphabet. That's good. Resist Trump? Huh. Yeah, luckily I don't recognize any of them. That's good. I'm glad to say. Good deal. All right. Well, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on that. We know she's doing good work there. C3 on X. When you realize the wife of the guy that prosecuted January Sixers runs the No Kings protest, everything else makes sense. Then you learn she also started a legal defense fund with an attorney representing E.J. Carroll. And your head is ready to explode. Her name is Fatima Graves. I think it's pronounced Fatima. There's a school in Westphalia called Fatima. I have a feeling that is as accurate as the word Versailles. C3 says a tangle web of evil. So that's a name we'll listen for. Fatima Graves, the wife of the guy that prosecuted January Sixers. Fatima. Sounds like an evil name, doesn't it? Let's see here. Senate Democrats posted a meme on X. It says the GOP owns this shutdown and the healthcare crisis they've created. Oh, really? We did, huh? Why? Because we couldn't stop Obamacare? Is that why it's our fault? Okay. Yes, you're right. It's Bush's fault. Bush 43 for appointing John Roberts. You're right. It is on us. Senate Demonic Rats on X said, voters are fed up with Republicans as they continue their shutdown and send premiums skyrocketing instead of working with Democrats to protect affordable health care. Honey, when was the last time we saw affordable health care? I have a feeling it was before the government started getting involved in health care. Gunther Eagleman responds, you are all fucking dipshits. Check the voting records in the Senate. The Democrats are voting for the shutdown. No, we can't have a continuing budget. We can't fund the government, not without money for our dreamers. By the way, they're in Napa. Did you know this? Today they all went to Napa. Talk about that next. Secretary Sean Duffy posted a photograph tomorrow. Well, it's today now. In the middle of a shutdown, Democrats are expected to go on a luxury retreat in Napa, complete with hot tubs, high-end dinners, and an organic vineyard. I thought all vineyards were organic. What am I missing here? Where are our air traffic controllers working without pay to keep our airspace safe? So they're flying to Napa, all of the Senate demonic rats. But they're flying private, so they don't need air traffic control, right? Wrong. They need air traffic controllers. Let's see. Secretary Duffy says, end the shutdown and get the American people their paychecks. That was in response to the meme that the GOP owns this shutdown. It's a nice try, but nobody believes your side anymore. You guys are on the ash heap of history. Not yet? Okay, well, it's coming. Senator Chris Murphy, did he really go on Disgrace the Nation? No. He did. He really did. He was on CBS News Disgrace the Nation this weekend. Eric Dougherty says, wow, Democrats failed so miserably on the government shutdown, even CBS is brutally calling them out now. Uh-oh. When you've lost Cronkite, you've lost the war, am I right?
You have been critical in the past of the tactic of choosing to shut down the government. You were in 2018. You were back in 2013 when it was a discussion over health care. This is what you said in 2018.
The future of the American health care system was a legitimate public policy issue, as is the security of our borders. But we shouldn't be having the discussion amidst a government shutdown, trying to use our nation's security and all of these federal workers and the work that they do as hostages.
Aren't you doing today exactly what you were criticizing then?
No, that was a fight over sort of the long term.
That was a long term. No more comment necessary. I'm looking at Fox News, and they're gearing up for this presentation for Charlie Kirk. And yes, they're all outside in the sun and the breeze. That's wine drinking weather right there. I bet you they're serving wine. I don't see any. Lizzie Warden. Haven't talked about her in a while. All right. Let's listen to what she says here. Yep, this is what she posted on X. Because of Republicans' massive health care cuts, millions of American families will see their premiums skyrocket. That could mean having to choose between paying for health care or electricity. That's how dire our health care crisis is. I know everything's a tragedy, honey. That's why demonic rats are not giving up, she says. I wish you guys would give up. We wouldn't be having these problems.
So we're all starting to hear from the people who will be affected by the Republican health care cuts. It will make basic health care unaffordable. We just moved into our first home, and now I'm concerned we won't be able to afford basic services like food, electricity, and heating.
Yeah, we believe you.
Yeah, Jason, you got it right. The Republicans would rather shut down government than make sure that your health care costs don't go through the roof. That's what this fight is all about.
How do you take yourself seriously, man? You are a caricature of yourself. Oh my gosh, these people. Holden.
You're a big fat phony.
I don't think she's fat, is she? Well, she did have a beer. She did have that beer. Let's see what Speaker Mike Johnson responded here. Okay, here's some simple facts for you, Lizzie. Bathhouse care was created and passed entirely by demonic rats. That would be you. Since bathhouse care took effect, health insurance premium have skyrocketed. Oh, I would have said something like doubled and tripled if it was me, but skyrocketed works, I guess. Number three, the bathhouse care COVID era subsidies were also passed entirely by demonic rats and set to expire at the end of this year. Demonic rats have increased health care costs exponentially and are now shutting down the government as they try to cover up their own failures and somehow blame Republicans. Mike Johnson says it's time for demonic rats to reopen government so we can fix this mess. Oh, no, no. You guys have done plenty. Do not reopen, please. I'm serious. Shut it down. We don't need it. It's not, you know, they say that we, at best, government's a necessary evil. I say that the juice is not worth the squeeze. As I sit here between Knob Noster and Whiteman, it's easy for me to say, I think we can protect our borders. I think we can take out bad guys. We don't need a federal government anymore, do we? Do we need a post office? Do we? Is it really worth all this? Is it worth sending a third of my freaking life to Washington, D.C. in the form of a check for this? Nah, I disagree, Speaker. Leave it shut down. I've had sufficient. I'm going to refresh Truth Social now. Nope, 3 hours ago. All right, the questionable gardener on X gives us this graph. Government-funded health care has tripled, while out-of-pocket costs remain the same or went up. It's note the highest single item expense for the federal government and Democrats want, I guess it's noteworthy. The highest single item expense for the federal government and Democrats want to add another $1 trillion. I saw this graph on Newsmax last night. Who's from the authors, the Kaiser Family Foundation Health Insurance Marketplace Calculator. The name of the chart is Almost Entire Bathhouse Premium Increases Paid For by Taxpayers. Yeah. COVID credits further shifted costs from enrollees to taxpayers. Let's see. We had COVID credits 21, 2, 3, 4 in this year. But let's say the benchmark plan premium for a 50-year-old at 200% FPL in 2013 was about $3,000, and it was all paid for by the enrollee. Then enter the Unaffordable Care Act. Now suddenly the enrollee pays, I don't know, $1,500, but the policy costs $5,000. Guess who that's getting to pay that? You know, the people who are working till April 23. And then it just gets worse and worse. We'll just talk about how the enrollee never pays over $2,000 ever from 14 to 26. But the government share, as in you and me, it goes up. The overall premium starts off at $5,000. And now that same policy is $10,000. 80% of it paid by you and me per enrollee. The enrollee pays 20% of it, or exactly $2,000. And that is what happens when government starts stuff that's not in their purview. I call it the 39 enumerated powers, but you could make the case that there's closer to a dozen enumerated powers and then a couple of dozen of, oh, what's that term? I gotta scroll back. I had a nice text exchange with one of the listeners. Was it Friday night? Yes, I like it. Up for debate. Two dozen up for debate. Implied powers. Yes, there's definitely a dozen implied powers. It's fascinating. We've been sitting here talking about 39 enumerated powers. Enumerated versus implied. So I've been saying 39 enumerated powers, but I think really what we have is a dozen enumerated powers and two dozen implied powers. And that's where it gets sticky. And I don't think healthcare was any of them. It's not. C. Steele says, when solar was being incentivized, installation costs went up. Subsidized healthcare works the exact same way. Well said. You need to get government out of things. They F up everything they touch. That's why there's so few enumerated and implied powers. Because founders, framers, ratifiers understood that when you're messing with other people's money, you sort of don't have a motivation to watch over it. In fact, it's the opposite. All right. Moving on. Democrats have increased health care costs exponentially, now shutting down the government as they try to cover their own failures and somehow blame Republicans. Yeah, that was what Mike Johnson said. AmericanThinker.com. This is a hellacious article. I'm going to hold it for after the bottom of the hour break. It's time for us to play some music from the Breeders. It's 3:30 exactly. That's an abrupt end to a song. Instead of the fade. That's more better. What'd I say? It was AmericanThinker.com headline. Bathhouse care. Steal from the poor, give to the rich. I like it. Bathhouse and most Democrats have wanted government control of all health insurance for decades. They knew that wouldn't fly, so they decided to stick their foot in the door with the falsely named Affordable Care Act. Bathhouse and other Democrats intentionally lied continuously about how the bill would allow you to keep your doctor in your plan and that your premiums would substantially fall. The big insurance companies had a captive audience who were required to buy Rolls-Royce policies, and prices naturally skyrocketed. Medical providers also had no incentive to control costs since there were no longer annual limits or lifetime limits allowed in the policies. In 21, after 11 years of bathhouse care, only 12 million people were enrolled, less than 4% of the public. And that just wasn't enough dependents for demonic rats, so they devised new ways to screw the taxpayers. In 22, they used COVID, which had long been over, to justify huge premium subsidies to high-income individuals. They stuck these subsidies into the falsely named Inflation Reduction Act, but pretended they were ending at the end of 25 to pretend the IRA was paid for. By 25, 24 million people were on bathhouse care. And that is one major reason demonic rats are currently holding federal employees and the public hostage by saying the huge subsidies that they claimed they were sunsetting can't be allowed to end. Why aren't the fact checkers calling out Chuck Schumer's lie that 60 million people would lose their insurance if Republicans get their way? So now we're in a government shutdown, and you may be asking yourself, how the hell did we get here? Donald Trump and the Republican Party are hell-bent on taking health care away from 60 million people. If there are only 24 million people in total, how can 60 million be at risk of losing health care? The media also knows that huge amounts of money have been funneled to illegals despite the law preventing it because of demonocrats. White House memo exposes demonocrats' history of pushing health care for illegal immigrants. The memo describes how federal resources were abused by the Brandon administration in demonocrat states to provide health care for illegal immigrants. According to the memo, 14 states and the District of Corruption operate state-funded health care programs for illegal immigrants. They happen to be California, Colorado, Connecticut, the District of Corruption, Illinois, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New York, New Jersey, Oregon, Rhode Island, Utah, Vermont, and Washington. There's clearly also massive fraud in bathhouse care when 40% of policyholders have no claims. The rise of phantom bathhouse care enrollees. Brandon COVID credits drive massive increase in individual market enrollees with no medical claims. The number of ACA individual market enrollees with no medical claims more than tripled from 21 to 24. Nearly 12 million enrollees had no medical claims during 24, equal to 8 million enrollees on an annualized basis. A staggering 40% of enrollees and 94% of actuarial values, silver plans and bronze plans had not one medical claim all of 2024. The rise in phantom enrollees is absent in the small group market, strongly suggests it was driven by Brandon's COVID credits. Tens of billions in federal subsidies are flowing to insurers and brokers for phantom enrollees, people without a single doctor visit, prescription filled, or service received. Just like in Social Security, isn't it? They get ballots, though. Oh, phantoms. The surge mirrors Paragon's findings on improper enrollment, showing taxpayer dollars wasted on coverage for people not using the program. Well, they don't exist. And after 14 years of peddling the lie that bathhouse care made insurance more affordable, the Washington Post finally told the truth, conceding that it was never affordable. Here's a quote. Color me shocked. After more than a decade of breathless cheerleading for the so-called Affordable Care Act, the editorial elites at the Washington Post have finally admitted what conservatives have been saying all along. Bathhouse care was never affordable. As the Post's own editorial board now concedes, the law, quote, was never actually affordable, close quote. The sudden burst of honesty comes amid the latest government shutdown showdown, which demonocrats sparked in part by demanding yet another blank check to keep Brandon's lavish COVID-era insurance subsidies alive. AmericaThinker.com. And this is a waste of time to discuss because the government does not have the authority to get involved in the health insurance game. Period. Full stop. And I wish other people would say it like Donald Trump. That'd be refreshing. I'm sorry. I've read the Constitution. I don't see that. I don't think it can be there. All right. Well, speaking of Trump, he went ahead and put up the link to watch the President Trump participating in a Medal of Freedom ceremony for Charlie Kirk. Just came up on Truth Social 2 minutes ago. And it's pretty much exactly what I'm watching on Fox News right now. Ha ha ha. The Patriot Oasis brings us a 41-second sounder from CNN. It's Hakeem and Dana Bash. Patriot Oasis says, CNN's Dana Bash, or is it Dana, just embarrassed Hakeem Jeffries on live television. Let's listen.
To try to find
you're right down
ground.
The hall from Mike Johnson's office. I know exactly where you are. You could probably take a few steps and go knock on the door and talk to him. Have you tried that?
Speaker Johnson hasn't been given permission to have a conversation with me or Leader Schumer, and he said as much earlier today.
So you don't think he would talk to you at all?
We can have a conversation, but the problem is that until they get the green light to...
What's that mean, he hasn't been given permission?
...actually have a meaningful discussion to try to find common ground and a bipartisan...
Who gives the green light exactly?
...partisan path forward and a...
The judges, I guess the judiciary hasn't given us permission.
...willingness to address the damage that...
Clearly it's an Article 3-ish situation.
...Republicans have done to the health, the safety, and the...
Shut up, asshole. Enemy within. Speaking of Dana Bash, here she is May 28. She's having a discussion with, I guess, her panel. Yeah, it's a show called Inside Politics. John King, that's his name. And this is in May, so 5 months ago, talking about Trump. So seeking peace in the Gaza.
The premise of this whole conversation was an expectation that Donald Trump himself set in the campaign, mm-hmm. which is, I'm going to fix all of this. And a lot of people believed it. It turns out even the Hamas terrorists, apparently, who were holding hostages.
Yeah, they wanted...
Who?
The terrorists.
Were afraid of Trump.
Yeah, they wanted Kamala to be chosen.
You talked politics with them?
Yeah. They wanted Kamala to be elected.
The war is definitely not over, and not all hostages are out.
Not all hostages are out. And again, another thing that Donald Trump said would end. But the rest of the world is saying Donald Trump cannot be trusted on these issues where America used to lead. There is American leadership here. It's Netanyahu, do whatever you want. It's not, how do we end this? Where's an American president to try to figure this out?
He
just wants Gaza emptied so they can build hotels.
I think it's the same idea of what we were talking about with Ukraine, is that he didn't understand why it wasn't being done before he was there. Then he got into office and realized, wow, this is really, really hard. No, and now he's turned his attention elsewhere.
It's so not black and white. That's what's happening.
Mm-hmm. King said Trump only cares about building hotels in Gaza. Bash says people actually believe Trump would end the war. Trump doesn't understand the conflict. Would you like some ketchup on that egg on your face? Biatch. Here comes Trump now. And the First Lady.